ॐ भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय टेक्स्ट 1 एंड 2 श्री शुक उवाच आत तस्मात् परतस्त्रयोदासलक्षय योजनातरो यत्तत् विष्णो परमं पदम् अभिवादन्ति यत्राह महा भगवतो ध्रुवा औतना पदीय अग्निनेन्द्र प्राजपातिना कश्यपिना धर्मेण च सामकालयुग्भि सबहु मनं दक्षिणात् क्रियमाणे इदानीमपि कल्पजीवनम् अजीव्या उपास्ते तस्ये हानुभाव उपावानिता. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, 1,300,000 yojanas, in brackets, 10,400,000 miles, above the planets of the seven sages, is the place that learned scholars describe as the abode of Lord Vishnu. There the son of Maharaj Uttanapada, the great devotee Maharaj Dhruva, still resides as the life source of all living entities who live until the end of the creation. Agni, Indra, Prajapati, Kashyapa, and Dharma all assemble there to offer him honor and respectful obeisances. They circumambulate him with their right sides towards him. I have already described the glorious activities of Maharaj Dhruva in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam." Text 2. Established by the supreme will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the pole star, which is the planet of Maharaj Dhruva, constantly shines as the central pivot for all the stars and planets. The unseen, sleeping, invisible, most powerful time factor causes these luminaries to revolve around the pole star without cessation. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is distinctly stated herein that all luminaries, the planets and stars, revolve by the influence of the supreme time factor. The time factor is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is under the influence of the time factor, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind and loves his devotee, Maharaj Dhruva, so much that he has placed all the luminaries under the control of Dhruva's planet and has arranged for the time factor to work under him or with his cooperation. Everything is actually done according to the will and direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But to make his devotee Dhruva the most important individual within the universe, the Lord has placed the activities of the time factor under his control. Namo Vishnu. So, we're starting a new chapter today. And I have heard from some devotees the last few chapters in Srimad Bhagavatam and have been dealing with a subject matter which sometimes we wonder what does it have to do with spiritual teaching. We had one chapter called The Movements of the Sun, or the Studying the Structure of the Universe, The Movements of the Sun, The Orbits of the Planet. And now this one is called the Shishumara Planetary System. So these are all topics which are related to, we would say, rather a materialistic or material science of astronomy or cosmology. So why is it so significant that these topics are included in the Srimad Bhagavatam? And there are various explanations for this fact. One is actually given in these two verses. after describing all these wonderful arrangements of the cosmic creation, the cosmology according to Vedic view, here we come to the conclusion and we see that this wonderful cosmic manifestation with all its intricate workings, where all the planetary systems are working in perfect harmony, in perfect orbit, in complete order. The climax of this science or this fact is that everything is revolving around the planet of Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj, this is actually the pole, which we can see in the sky as the pole star. Even in West, it's interesting enough, we call this in Western science, we call this the pole star. Because pole means, like for example, we have also in this Earth planet, the North Pole, South Pole. This is the place where the axis, so to say, where the world is, the Earth is revolving around that center, which is not moving. Well, Prabhupada is giving the example like a bull is being tied to a post. Here in India, they do this sometimes in order to irrigate the land or sometimes to thresh the rice. They tie the bull to a pole and then he's revolving around that pole all day long to do his service. So similarly, even as according to Western perception, there is a planet in this universe which is the pole star, around which all the other luminaries, all the other, so to say, the center of the universe around which everything is revolving. And of course, this revolving element is, as described here, is very much connected with the time element. So according to the orbits the planets take, different relative perception of time is there on each particular planet. So Dhruva Maharaj is directly or indirectly involved with one of the most powerful forces within the universe, which is affecting everything that exists and every living being, the time factor. So from this we can see Prabhupada was leading, or Srimad Bhagavatam is leading on to this point, is making the description over all these different chapters to come to the conclusion the ultimate is, this is all arranged ultimately for the glorification of the pure devotee, which in this case is Dhruva Maharaj. But also there is some other, let's say, interpretation you might say to this fact, why in Srimad Bhagavatam we have these subject matters included. Interestingly enough, if you noticed that in each volume of Srimad Bhagavatam we have the same preface. Srila Prabhupada wrote a preface to the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first volume, which is repeated in every single volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the other day we had this, we were attending this function in So Prabhuji was, he was making a class on the, because it was Gopunim, on the, on Lord Chaitanya's mission statement for the Sankirtan movement, which is stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, go in every town and village and induce everyone to chant Hare Krishna. This was Lord Chaitanya's practically summed up mission statement for the Sankirtan movement. So this preface which we have at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam on each volume, this is, so to say, Prabhupada's mission statement for the significance of this Bhagavata Purana. And so in other words, practically everything which we read in there, which follows, if we see it from the perspective of this original or introductory mission statement, we will get a different perspective. This is, I think, one of the most amazing texts that Prabhupada has, I mean, everything Prabhupada has written is amazing. But this is, he condensed, like I said, this is like a mission statement. He condensed in a very few paragraphs very essential subject matters and in relationship to the significance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you read this, we will also get a perspective on, like I said, why these topics, these other topics that sometimes we consider as not spiritual signs, are included. So if you allow me, I may read just two paragraphs from this preface, where Prabhupada says, "We must know the present need of human society, and what is that need? Human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency towards one state or one human is towards one state or one human society." I might comment on this that when Prabhupada wrote this, this was in the beginning 60s. Before he came to America, he actually wrote this text. So at that time, what we see nowadays, what we call globalization, was not in the same degree, how to say, taking place. The intertwining of cultures and economies, as it is nowadays, what we call in the term of globalization, was not in the same. So you might say Prabhupada was actually foreseeing, in a sense, what is happening now, that the whole world is interconnected, internet, trade is being done, Indian companies are buying up American and German companies, and so much exchange is taking place. No country can live, so to say, by itself as a nation state as it was before. So the ideals of spiritual communism, Prabhupada says, according to Srimad Bhagavatams, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, nay, the entire energy of all living beings. The need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need in human society. It begins, therefore, with the aphorism of Vedanta philosophy, Janmadi Asya Yataha, to establish the ideal of a common cause. Human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It has made rapid progress in the field of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. But there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels even over less important issues. There is a need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam should be introduced also in the schools and colleges, for it is recommended by the great student devotee Prahlada Maharaj in order to change the demoniac face of society. So this is, in a nutshell, Prabhupada's vision of what he envisioned this book, this Srimad Bhagavat, to accomplish, to give a plan, a master plan, and a guidebook for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. And he called it a cultural presentation, which is very interesting. If you take the term culture, culture is basically the sum total of what is happening in a particular time, in a particular geographic place. Like we talk of American culture, which is, or Indian culture, which includes arts, theater, economy, military, entertainment, science, all this together, so to say, comprise what we call culture. So Prabhupada, he had this broad perspective that the Srimad Bhagavatam would provide a guidance that would affect every field of human society, in every aspect. And therefore, he was always very keen. Like in the beginning, there was this library party. Prabhupada instituted the library party. His vision was to place, like it says here, he was actually writing this, to place a set of Srimad Bhagavatams, the complete set, in every college library, every school library, every university library around the world, for all the thinking men. But not only the colleges, but ultimately for all thinking men, his vision was that they should get a set of Bhagavatams and take instruction and guidance for their re-spiritualization of their own culture, their own lives. So now how this is done, how to accomplish this, how, like I said, one example was given in the beginning days, this library party went around, and in practically many, many colleges around America, Europe, etc., Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, he was one of the key devotees who spearheaded that party in those years. So how can we, let's say, participate in this vision of Srila Prabhupada to promote the Srimad Bhagavatam, the concepts of Srimad Bhagavatam for the whole human society? In that regard, I would like to take another very interesting section out of the introduction of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Prabhupada included in the first volume, first canto. There he gave a short life story of the life and precepts of Lord Chaitanya. I have to look which page it is. Let's see. Page 14. There's something very interesting there, which I'd like to share with you. The incident was, maybe just to explain ahead of time, Lord Chaitanya at one point, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the guise of a devotee, he was, instead of chanting Hare Krishna, he was chanting the names of the damsels of Vrindavan. He was chanting the names of the gopis. He had some students at that time. This was before he had taken sannyas in Naradvip. So some of his students were astounded. Here he has been telling us the whole time to chant Hare Krishna. Now he's starting to chant the names of these women, of this Vrindavan damsels. And so they were actually, it caused some kind of a, he was criticized, there was some rumor spreading, some negative propaganda was going on, even from his own students. And then, of course, among the population in Naradvip, those who were, let's say, not inclined, they picked up, like whenever there is some negative news, people are very eager to pick up and gossip and spread it. So when he heard this fact, there's something very interesting which is taking place. He says, it says here, when the Lord became aware of this, he began to consider the various types of men. Actually, there was in a former version of editing of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it said he analyzed the various types of men. He made like an analysis. So here it says he began to consider the various types of men found in society. And he noted that especially the students, professors, fruitive workers, yogis, non-devotees, and different types of atheists were all opposed to the devotional service of the Lord. So he's concluded, my mission is to deliver all the fallen souls of this age. He thought, but if they commit offenses against me, thinking me to be an ordinary man, then they will not benefit. So his conclusion was, after this careful, systematic analysis of this, the social situation of his time and the people he was with, he analyzed, and then he came to a conclusion. He thought, how can I counteract this? So even though it says later on that he was in one sense not in favor of sannyas, especially in the age of Kali, because the tendency is that people, if they take sannyas in the age of Kali, many times, and we have seen in the past also, the devotees can't maintain this. But the situation in West Bengal at that time was such that the most respected people in society at that time were the Mayavadi sannyasis, They were the superstars of West Bengal. Anybody would offer, whether they were Mayavadis or not, whether they had any philosophical training or not, everybody would offer respect to a sannyasi. That was the cultural condition of that time. So because of that, he adapted this technique, you might say, that trick of accepting sannyas himself in order to practically force the people, even those who were opposed to the Sankirtan movement, to offer him respect as a sannyasi. And once that relationship of respect was established, then also they were in a position to hear. At least they would not commit offenses and then reject that message. So here we have an analysis which Lord Chaitanya carried out of those who are, let's say, against, who are not inclined for spiritual life. Different groups of society was given. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is doing something very similar. In the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 16, he's approaching the same topic from the opposite angle. He's giving a description of the classes of men who are inclined for spiritual life, who have some attraction for spiritual topics or spiritual science. So that verse is verse 16. It says, "O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me, and the distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute." So before we had categories of people who were opposed. Here we have four categories of people who have, let's say, a basic inclination that they make them candidates for a spiritual life. Those who are distressed. In most religions throughout the world, a very large portion of the congregation or the believers, they go to the churches or the mosques or the temple because they have some material problem. And by approaching God in the temple or the deity, they may offer some prayer, they may do some puja with the hope that their material problem will be eradicated. And material problems everyone has. Anyone who is living in this world has material problems. As soon as we have this body, it is inevitable that we have material problems, just like I have dysentery today. So this is a just small inconvenience that the body is automatically bringing. As we grow older, old age comes, it brings so many inconveniences, and ultimately death is there. And in the meantime, there are so many varieties of different anxieties, how to maintain one's family, how to protect one's loved ones, how to get a proper education, how to pass the exam. So many examples of different anxiety which is following us throughout our life. Then there's another class. They are not so much in the anxiety mode, but they want wealth. They want material prosperity. So therefore we see also here in India, many people, they go to Lakshmi temple because Lakshmi is goddess of fortune. They will conduct some puja in order to attract some wealth, to get some wealth. Then there is another group which is very interesting. And this brings us to the verses that we were just reading before. There's one group of people which are simply curious, inquisitive. And this is a very large section of, let's say, candidates for spiritual life. I don't know how it is here in India, but for example, in Germany, if you go to a magazine shop, you will have one section of science or popular science magazines. Like in America, they also have this magazine, Popular Science, I think, or something like that, right? They have, on different subject matters, on history, on cosmology, on astronomy, on biology, different topics. The same way in TV, they have programs, like even in Germany, we have one program which is by an Indian scientist who lives in Germany. He has a weekly program. His name is Ranjit Yogeshwar. And he speaks fluent German, and he has the ability to explain scientific things in very plain language. So it's very popular. So these type of programs and magazines, why are people watching or why are people reading? In one sense, they do not get any immediate benefit out of this. But it is satisfying their curiosity. It's just like some people take pleasure in seeing some beautiful objects or hearing beautiful sounds, beautiful music. So some people who have some aesthetic, culture, they may go to a museum and they actually take pleasure in seeing a beautiful sculpture or a beautiful painting, or like coming, for example, to a temple like this. People will appreciate the beauty of this place. So in one sense, what benefit do you get from seeing beauty? Not really any benefit, except that it is doing something to your mind, which makes you appreciative. And so the same way, there are people who are curious or inquisitive. They simply want to know certain things. How does this work? How is this work? How did the universe start? How is how are the planets? How is the situation on Mars, for example? Things like that. So even for that, there is the Srimad Bhagavatam, provides satisfaction for this type of people. In other words, and then of course we have the last category of man, which is said here, those who are actually searching for the absolute truth. Those are the fewest. Out of all these four categories, the men who are searching for the absolute truth, they are like the smallest in number. And of course, anyone who is seriously searching for the absolute truth, if he comes in contact with Srimad Bhagavatam from the very first verse, he will be enlightened and delighted. So, in other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it contains topics that will satisfy any person in this category. There are descriptions in there. For example, we have this story, let's say a person who is suffering. We have one example, the story of Gajendra. He was approaching Dhruva Maharaj. He wanted to have a big kingdom. There we have somebody who is looking for wealth. And the interesting thing, also Prabhupada makes this point in this purport, that the people who, let's say, approach spiritual life with these four motives, in the beginning their motive may be materially motivated, materially tinged. But in the due course of time, because they're approaching a spiritual path and a spiritual teaching, and perhaps even devotees who promote this teaching, their original desire will become purified, and they actually will ultimately take to pure Krishna consciousness. This was the story of Dhruva Maharaj, and he, from his originally material motive to acquire a kingdom which was bigger than that of his father, he worshipped Lord Krishna. So then his motive was purified, and he became the king of, or the presiding deity of the pole star. So Srila Prabhupada, I remember in 1972, there was a letter that was sent to all the temple presidents by Srila Prabhupada. There was he pointed out some, let's say, in regards to the Back to Godhead magazine, he had some criticism or some. He was thinking that the Back to Godhead magazine, which he always considered the backbone, the link, so to say, to the masses of the people, had become too esoteric in subject matter. So he felt that these esoteric topics, so to say, highly philosophical topics, they will not attract the general mass of people, so to say, that to bridge this gap, just as it's kind of on the on what we have been saying, these four categories of men. So he was sending a letter to the temple presidents suggesting that we should make a list of all the different problems that exist, that social problems, political problems, economic problems, psychological problems, relationships problems, so many different problems. And after making that list of all these problems, then show how Krishna consciousness and Srimad Bhagavatam can give the solution to this problem. And then write an article that is being posted in the Back to Godhead magazine. So I wanted to share something from my experience that actually I'm working on this also again now in Germany, to which this topic has relevance in regards to Srimad Bhagavatam. When I was in Singapore many years back, we started, actually we already started that in America. Hansa Dutta Prabhu, he introduced this, and actually which we called selling contract sales, selling whole sets of Srimad Bhagavatam to the people. And for that, we, in America, with some devotees, I was staying in Berkeley at that time, we actually enrolled in a company, an encyclopedia sales company. Actually, I made the connection. I called up the chief executive officer of one of the main encyclopedia companies in America. And somehow or another, it was purely Krishna's arrangements. Usually when you call there, you can never talk to the CEO of the company. You get, there's like two or three secretaries before that, and you get, basically, you already get fifted out before you actually can talk. But this time, I called, and I had right away the CEO of the company at the telephone. So we made the presentation. We said, we are Hare Krishnas. We want to learn how to sell Bhagavatam sets, books. And you are a successful company. You are doing door-to-door sales with these books. And we are praying to you, pleading, please help us that we can learn this. So I said, it must be your lucky day, because he was this company was in Chicago. He said, tomorrow I happen to be in San Francisco. I have a one-hour stopover in San Francisco. If you want, you can meet me at the airport. We meet at 10 o'clock at the airport restaurant. So I went to the meet him at the airport the next day, and we had some discussion, and he somehow or another was sympathetic to the idea of helping us. He said, okay, I make a deal with you. I will send you my best trainer for 3 months. He will train you. He will teach you everything you have to know about selling these sets. And in return, you will just have to commit yourself for 3 months. You're selling my encyclopedias. So we made a deal. We said, okay, deal. So actually, for 3 months, there was a group of maybe about 6, 7, 8 devotees. We got trained by this salesman. His name was Ron Webb. And we were selling, every night we went out and sold encyclopedias. But it was a very, very, very valuable experience, because the whole, for everything there is a technique, for everything there is some science how to do it properly. So they had this, they had perfected the science. And then when I was in Singapore, we were printing the Bhagavatam sets there. Since there were no devotees, I was the only devotee there, I wanted to do the same program in Singapore. So there was, again, Krishna facilitating, and there was a book fair. the Singapore Book Fair. So I went to the book fair in Singapore, and there was a booth of an American encyclopedia company who had a branch in Singapore and who had salespeople in Singapore. And at the booth of this encyclopedia company was their marketing manager. He was an Indian. So I came and I approached him. I said, I want to do this program here in Singapore. Can you help? So he was I showed him the Bhagavatam, and he was inspired. He said, I tell you what, I will give up my job here. I will join you, and I bring all my best salesmen with me. So from there, actually for about 2 years, we had about 21 people employed, and their service or their activity consisted of selling Srimad Bhagavatams. And every Sunday we had a program at our house, where we stayed. We called it Product Knowledge, and we gave a Bhagavatam class. Because once you have to sell something, you have to also know about it. And as a result of it, actually several of these salesmen became initiated disciples. Two of them became disciples of Tamakrishna Maharaj. Two of them became disciples of Hansa Dutta at that time. But the point I'm trying to make is, the way actually we approach this, and this is why I'm coming back to this original preface of Srila Prabhupada, and also this subject matter which we had here. If we have a system of analyzing the Srimad Bhagavatam, first of all, in having in mind these four categories of man, and then, so to say, categorizing the Bhagavatam and extracting from it, not everything, but as an example, on different topics, cosmology, psychology, sociology, economics, history, art, all these topics are there. And then learn how to present this Bhagavatam in this way to the corresponding audience. It is practically speaking self-propelled. We had, some of these, we were selling those books in Singapore for $1,000 Singapore, which is about approximately $500 US. So you can figure 500 times 50, it's 25,000 rupees for one set of Bhagavatam. And we had some of these salesmen, they were selling 30, 40 sets a month. And my vision this is what I would like to do in Germany again now. Actually, I'm working with a group of devotees to prepare the presentation so that we can start. Because now, again, they have printed this small set of Bhagavatam, which makes it it's very easy because the cost is not so high. And the whole set is there. But in the past, there was always the problem that in the beginning days they printed 2 million copies of the first volume, first canto, and then maybe another 500,000 of the first volume, second canto, and then the other ones you couldn't get. There was some time you could only, because for street Sankirtan, they always distributed one book at a time. So there was a time there was not a complete sets available, but now there is. So if we can take up Prabhupada's vision, as he has expressed here, this Prabhupada had so much hope and so much expectation from the potency of this Srimad Bhagavatam. If you can be inspired by that, I'm hearing also here every morning you are reading your Sankirtan scores. If you can be inspired by this idea, by this vision, if you go out, if you sell one set, it's like 30 big books in one time. And the fact of the matter is, once these books are placed in the home of people, not only the person who purchases it, But this was one of our lines, for example, for our encyclopedia sales. The children, like we would actually make appointments in America, this was how we were trained. We would make appointments with people who had just gotten married, or people who, you know, you could see the birth register, who just had received a child. Because the young couples, when they just get married, and especially when they just get children, their affection for their children and the worry about the future of the children is very strong. They have the most affection for the child when it is very small. So then this was the approach. We said, when the child grows up in a home where there is books, it is much likely that when he grows up, he will be a reader. He will study. If a child grows up in a home where there's no books, where he can never even touch a book, chances are that when he grows up as an adult, he also will have no connection with reading literature. So the same can be applied in spiritual ways for Srimad Bhagavatam. Here in India, because this is the culture, it is even more so, like we were saying the other day, even so materialism is also creeping in, and many people are starting to follow kind of Western lifestyles or fashions or attitudes. But still, it's actually in comparison, it's only a very thin crust on the consciousness, on the heart. Beneath that, the Indian psyche is naturally inclined for bhakti. It is natural. We were discussing the other day, you can perceive from the like what we call culture or pop culture, the differences of mentality of the different people. Like, for example, or even by the movies you can see. Like, for example, the Chinese movies always have to do with fighting. Always kung fu. Their whole culture is based on fighting. Fighting culture. Every movie is practically hardly any other movie, or at least 80-90% have to do with kung fu fighting. In American movies, American culture, those movies that become big blockbusters, there has to be big explosion. Something is, even somebody has like a Schwarzenegger, he has like a gun, and he will fire it, and it will make an explosion like an atom bomb. And some building will just crumble and be blown into bits and pieces. So American culture is very fond of blowing things up and destroying big special effects. The movie is being, special effects were so great. And special effect means big destruction. And Indian movies, I mean, of course now there's also some influence of Hollywood style, but still, to a large degree, the Indian movies, there's always the underlying point is some very strong emotion, very strong sentiment. Some love story, he wanted to marry this, but he arranged marriage has to be with the other person, and so they're separate, and then 40 years later they come together. Or, or some love story between father and son. The father, the son is becoming, he's turning away from the family, and the father is heartbroken. And then in the end, the son is coming back, and everybody's crying tears of, or the other way around. This is basically, you can see, the Indian movies, and this is indicative for the culture and the psyche of the people. It has to do with strong emotions. In the end, everybody, and even now, I not tell you this because I've seen in Germany, they're showing this in German television now, these Indian movies. In the end, everybody is crying like torrents of tears. Why? Because the Indian psyche mentality is such, it is naturally inclined for emotion of love, which ultimately, in its non-perverted state, is bhakti. That's why we have this here. So therefore, if we make the proper adjustment and we focus on this, how to say, vision that Prabhupada had, it will be very much possible to, just as Prabhupada envisioned, to not only place this Bhagavatam sets in every school, in every college, but in every cultured gentleman's or family's home. And as a matter of fact, when we were printing the Bhagavatam sets in Singapore at the time when I was there, the temple president of Calcutta at that time, it was Adhidhara. I think now he's not with ISKCON anymore, I don't know. But that's a different topic. But in any case, he was ordering thousands of sets. And in Bengal, in Calcutta, they were literally selling thousands of sets. Also, we sent to Fiji, we sent to South Africa. So the Indian people there, the devotees who picked up on this idea, they were selling Bhagavatam sets, and it was very, very successful. So maybe, like I said, I would like to revive this program, which I started in Singapore and Germany, coming here to India and also especially to this temple. It is a help for me because I was telling my daughter and my son-in-law, to make this program successful, this is what I realized. For me, because I've done it in the past, but for me to actually redo it, I have to raise my level of Krishna conscious practice. My sadhana has to be very strong, and I have to shut out those things which are distractions, which are simply time busters, which are consuming my time and not leaving me any energy. And basically, to just like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, that there has to be a single focus. Those whose aim is not one, who are many, whose mind is many branched, they cannot accomplish. And this is what I have been realizing. I have been, let's say, not cultivating properly my spiritual strength, and which is the prerequisite for making such a program successful. And coming here and being with you devotees, it's a very inspiring time for me, very inspiring experience, and I hope that I will be able to carry that back to my life in Germany. So thank you very much. If there are any question or comment? Yes?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the wonderful class. I was just wondering, because I'm interested in book distribution.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if you could help us, maybe like give us a small seminar on what the tips that you learned while you were in Singapore, basically. So if you could have like a small seminar for probably whoever's interested in book distribution, that would be of great help.
Yes, I will be glad to.
Right.
We will be here until Tuesday, so within that time, sometimes tomorrow we are planning to go to the farm, depending on how our dysentery is developing. Hopefully it will be over, but then maybe on Monday will be a possibility for that. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, thank you very much. It's an honor for me to speak to you. Hare Krishna.